Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. Now, the three main candidates in next Tuesday's congressional primary in New York City. Congressman Charles Rangel is defending his seat against three challengers officially. One of them, Yolanda Garcia, does not speak English and has not been doing media. So we will hear for about 7 minutes each from State Senator Adriano Espaillat, Pastor Michael Walgrund, and then Congressman Rangel in this district that is Upper Manhattan into a little part of the Bronx around Kingsbridge. Senator Espaillat, thanks for joining us first. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you so much for inviting me once again.
So if President Obama were to ask Congress for a resolution supporting airstrikes in Iraq and a few hundred special forces advisors on the ground, how would you vote?
I would not vote for that. I would like to see a multinational, the UN-led peacekeeping force that will stabilize the country again so that we can avoid the carnage that we're seeing on the front page of the papers. This is really horrendous what's happening in that part of the world, in Iraq. And, you know, we should not get at it alone. It should be a peacekeeping force that will stay on the ground, stabilize the situation, and see whether or not the country it's ready to go back on track for democracy and whether it could guarantee the safety of its citizens without the kind of slaughter and carnage that we'll be witnessing on TV.
Just to be clear, when you say peacekeeping force, that could or could not include U.S. troops, according to you?
Of course, it could include U.S. troops, but, you know, it's not a war. It's a peacekeeping force, UN-led, with several countries, our allies, and folks across the world that want to see that part of the region is stabilized and that people are not being shot and killed by the dozens in broad daylight in public. I mean, it's horrendous what's happening there.
Congressman Rangel sometimes talks about reinstituting a draft so there isn't such an economic draft and one that's racially selective in that respect. Would you advocate that too?
I would advocate for a draft. I think that a draft is a great equalizer. You know, the kids, the sons and daughters of rich folk, middle class folks and working class families will be able to have the privilege and the honor to defend our country. And so definitely I will be supportive of that.
What do you consider the two biggest issues in the district that you could help do something about as a member of Congress as opposed to in the state legislature where you've been?
Well, first is the fact that for far too long the Congress has been a strong supporter of Wall Street. He voted to repeal Glass-Steagall. He voted to dilute Dodd-Frank. He signed on to a call for ensuring that retirement plan advisors will have fiduciary responsibility with their clients and they will put their clients first. So he sided with the fat cats in Wall Street as opposed to 116, 125th Street, 181st Street. I will change that. I will go and make sure the regulatory practices that are important to ensure that banks and the financial institutions don't engage in risky business that will keep the taxpayer on the hook, that those kind of regulations are kept strong and that our economy can move forward. The second issue, I think, is income inequality in housing. And so you have this very broken economic development model that the empowerment zone has engaged in, providing for poverty-level jobs, $8 an hour, keeping workers under $16,000 a year, making them eligible for food stamps, Medicaid, Section 8, so that you and I, Brian, the taxpayers, we have to subsidize these companies on their benefit package for their workers while they continue to recall unprecedented profits. So that's the income inequality crisis. The epicenter of it is right there on 125th Street, right there on 116th Street in Harlem and East Harlem. And it further exacerbates a situation of housing where people cannot pay their rent, where you have high luxury apartments coming up on one side of the street, and you have the NYCHA building on the other side of the street with simple violations and simple problems in the apartment that take as long as a year to repair because Congress has cut and cut and cut. the HUD budget. So those are the two issues that I look forward to working to resolve them, to bring some relief to those tenants that live in those buildings, some relief to folks that are making $8 an hour.
You and Congressman Rangel have both gotten criticism from some immigrant group advocates for your apparent support of the Dominican Republic's tough new undocumented immigrants law. They denied citizenship, as you know, to some 200,000 people born in the country, but to undocumented immigrants from Haiti, or even, I think, several generations down from them. New York One says both of you went down to the DR and praised the law. What's your position today?
Well, no, I did not praise the law. I originally criticized the tribunal's decision. Congressman Rangel went down and met with the head of the Constitutional Tribunal to pat him on the back and say that it was the greatest thing that's ever happened. I was critical of it. It's documented in the media. Juan Gonzalez did a piece in the Daily News where I immediately criticized the decision. I felt it was too harsh. Subsequent to that, I met with the Dominican president. I conveyed to him my concerns about the decision. He later agreed and was able to put a legislation in place to bring some reform, some level of reform to that.
A very small number of them back. But as a matter of principle, since obviously this has overtones for how people view the children of undocumented immigrants in this country, should all people born in either country have citizenship there as a birthright?
Well, that depends on the constitution of the country. And so our country has the right constitution, which says that if you're born in the United States on U.S. soil, it doesn't matter whether you're documented or not, what part of the world you come from.
You would advocate that for the Dominican as well?
A constitutional amendment to the Constitution. But I think that the law that President Medina submitted is a step in the right direction in furthering a debate and a dialogue that I think could lead to further reform.
In our last minute, is this congressional race only about who would be more effective in Congress, or do you disagree with Congressman Rangel on any issues?
No, we don't disagree on everything, but I think on the fundamental pieces that, you know, whether he can be effective or not, I think those are the issues that constituents are looking at. The fact that after he was censured, he has only been able to pass one piece of legislation, and the fact that he no longer could be the voice for the Democratic Party, so for us to take control of Congress again. It just won't happen. And you know what happened when he ran for reelection? We lost many seats. Many Democrats across the country in competitive districts lost their seats to Tea Party radicals because they got the support of Congressman Rangel while he was in the middle of his whole ethics scandal. So, you know, we want to make sure we take back Congress. He won't be able to take that message across the country. I think I will be able to take a message where I say, look, I'm an immigrant. I came from the Dominican Republic. I came here with no papers. And now I'm running for Congress, and I'm your congressional member. This is the scope and the possibility of our nation, of the United States of America. Anything could happen. Yes, we can. And so that message, I think, will resonate in corners across the country where Tea Party radicals and Republicans are making inroads. Yeah. I don't think Congressman Rangel will be able to do that.
And there we leave it with State Senator Adriano Espaillat. Senator, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
As we talk to the three main candidates in next Tuesday's congressional primary in New York City, the Upper Manhattan District into a part of the Bronx, Congressman Rangel will go third. Joining us next is Michael Walrund. He's pastor of the First Corinthian Baptist Church in Harlem. Pastor Walrund, thank you very much for joining us. Hello.
Good to be here. How are you?
Good. Same first question. If President Obama were to ask Congress for a resolution supporting airstrikes in Iraq and a few hundred special forces advisors on the ground, how would you vote as a member of Congress?
As a member of Congress, I probably would not support that. I think we've learned from Iraq before and even Afghanistan, the loss of life and soldiers whose lives have been lost. And I think we have to think of ways to not only engage in diplomatic strategies, but also I think we have to begin to engage in conversations with those who are in the neighboring countries, whether it's Jordan or Saudi Arabia, because I think it is not beneficial for the United States to go in there unilaterally and begin to bring resolution to the crisis there. We have to engage with our allies in those neighboring countries that are in the area.
What do you consider the two biggest issues in your district that you could help do something about as a member of Congress?
Well, I think one, we have to be kind of honest. Right now in Congress, because of the gridlock, it is becoming very difficult to begin to engage in the kind of progressive policies that would be immediately or directly beneficial to the district right now. But the issues in our district that are critical, I would say, are affordable housing and jobs. Now, on some level, when you talk about the issue of jobs, there are ways from Congress we can begin to impact this district, especially when the president says that in this country, one of the ways we can create jobs is through investment in infrastructure. And I've talked about from the beginning of this campaign that investment in infrastructure in New York City could be beneficial in many ways, especially with regard to job creation. There was a study done by the University of Massachusetts that said for every $1 billion invested in water infrastructure, it can create 12,000 jobs, and in roads and bridges, it can create 15,000 jobs. So there's the possibility that if we invest $1 billion in infrastructure, that can create about 13,500 jobs. Now, the same study said it would take $47 billion over about 5 years to really upgrade the infrastructure of New York City. For example, Brian, last year alone, we had 435, I believe, water main breaks. There were studies done that found that our bridges were, 11% of our bridges were structurally unsound in many ways. And so I think if we begin to think about that $47 billion investment over 5 years, you have the potential of creating over 634,000 jobs. And to me, that's critical. Now, we would have to fight locally to make sure that there are persons in this district who get those jobs. But I think fighting for investments and infrastructure from a federal level and seeing that those funds get to this district, well, into the city, and that persons from this district can get jobs. And then, of course, I think affordable housing in this community is the biggest one. I think that you have lifelong residents who are being priced out and who are having a hard time staying in this community. And I've talked about really preservation, creation, and protection. You preserve the affordable housing we have here in the city right now. There are 2,600 public housing buildings. 1,500 of those buildings are found to be below standard. So we want to preserve these buildings. Mayor even talked about the preservation of 120,000 units of affordable housing. And I support that in addition to trying to get money to from HUD to preserve the NYCHA housing. But even when the mayor talks about preserving 120,000 units of affordable housing, the problem is in our city is that since 1993, we've seen the decontrolling of 250,000 units. And so while you preserve and you have decontrol taking place, Brian, it becomes difficult to maintain those affordable housing. So there has to be, then I think, creative partnerships between private and public sector to engage in programs like the Sugar Hill development here in our district, which is creating exclusively affordable housing. And so I think you preserve what we have, we create exclusively affordable housing, and you protect the rent control properties so that and repeal vacancy decontrol, and you work with the legislators at the state level to really push that.
You're often referred to as a protege of the Reverend Al Sharpton. How would you describe your relationship?
Well, Reverend Sharpton is a friend of mine. Reverend Sharpton was really, when I came to the city in 2004, was one of the first persons who just reached out to me in friendship. So we've been friends since 2004, but it wasn't until 2012 that he asked if I was interested in being involved as a member of the board of directors of National Action Network. So I've never necessarily characterized my relationship as a protege. I came to the city 10 years ago, having pastored 8 years in North Carolina, been a community activist for 10 years in North Carolina before coming here. And so my work of activism and ministry as a pastor preceded my arrival in New York. And since then, I would categorize our relationship as a friendship.
And Reverend Sharpton has not endorsed Congressman Rangel, despite Reverend Sharpton's usual interest in black empowerment and maximizing black representation in Congress. They've had a rivalry that dates back to Rangel not endorsing Sharpton in his presidential primary runs. So are you helping Reverend Sharpton get revenge, as many people speculate, even if it means the seat is not held by an African-American anymore because the two of you split the black vote?
Well, let me say this. On some levels, Brian, to be honest, there are times when I hear that comment and it's rather offensive to me because it negates who I am as an individual. I'm not engaged in any act, especially with regard to this race, and trying to hurt someone or seek revenge. That is not my reason for being in this race. I've been a pastor in this community for 10 years. I've been an activist in this community for 10 years. I came to a congregation that had 300 members 10 years ago, and now there are over 9,000 members of this congregation. I'm running because I believe I present the best possibilities for the future of this district. I'm a visionary leader, and I take that seriously, and I take my leadership seriously. So there are times when I think it is offensive to undermine someone's ability, their potential, and who they are as a leader and a leader in this community. to think that I would engage in some act of revenge or put myself through a campaign that is, you know, Brian, very grueling in order to get back at somebody. I have no stake in that kind of game at all.
Practically speaking, if voters have had enough of Congressman Rangel, but the polls seem to show that only Senator Espaillat might actually beat him on Tuesday, why wouldn't a vote for you be a wasted vote?
I don't think it would be a wasted vote. I think there's some persons in Virginia right now who thought a vote for David Brett was a wasted vote, and yet he beat, you know, one of the most powerful Republicans in the House of Representatives. I don't think any vote is a waste. Polls, and we've heard it in the past several weeks, polls do not vote. The people will decide this race, and only a person who votes can determine whether or not their vote is wasted. And in this democracy, there's no such thing as a wasted vote. You vote for the person you believe embodies the best possibilities of leadership in your district.
So in our last 30 seconds, same last question I asked Senator Espaillat, is this race only about who would be more effective in Congress, or do you disagree on any issues that you would shout out about with your opponents?
Well, I think it is about who can be more effective and beneficial for this district. It has been stated several times, and I'll state it again, that the congressman was censured. And since that, I think we've seen the diminishing power of the congressman in Congress. And so at this point, there are many who believe we need a leader who can, one, begin to build seniority and be beneficial for the district. I happen to believe I embody that best possibility at this time. And so one thing I've differentiated for myself, I think, in all the debates and all the forums, is that, one, we've seen between Senator Espaillat and Congressman Rangel the same kind of divisiveness and pettiness and arguing that is really symptomatic of what is going on in D.C. and the gridlock. I find it impossible to think that during this race you would engage in that kind of divisiveness and pettiness and then be effective in engaging in conversation and negotiation in D.C. From the very beginning, we stuck to the issues, we stayed on message, and we really sought to address and speak directly to those issues that impact the district and not get in distracting dialogue or even undermining, I think, the people's intelligence by focusing on issues of race or these personal attacks. And at some point, we have to shift politics and begin to focus on the issues that really shape our communities.
Michael Warren, pastor of the First Corinthian Baptist Church, thank you very much. As we're talking to all three main candidates in next Tuesday's congressional primary in New York City for Upper Manhattan and part of the Bronx, back to back to back, and finally is the incumbent, Congressman Charles Rangel. Congressman, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
And I'll ask you the same first question I asked the other two. If President Obama were to ask Congress for a resolution supporting airstrikes in Iraq and a few hundred special forces advisors on the ground, how would you vote?
Absolutely not. I might reconsider if we enacted a draft where anybody would be subject to going to Iraq, but I would only do that symbolically because it's not going to pass. It is time for us to pull out and see who our friends are internationally, see if we can regain our credibility with our neighbors, and try to work out something. When it comes to the point, after we lost all of those lives in Iraq, that diplomats are now considering asking Iran for support, it really shows that allowing our country to go to war without getting the consent of the Congress, without knowing the facts, it is not the constitutional way that we should be performing. I feel so sad as a veteran that I go to these funerals and find it very, very difficult to explain why we're there.
What do you consider, Congressman, at this point, the two biggest issues in your district that you could help do something about as a member of Congress in your next two-year term?
To a large extent, what we're able to do is how bad the back of the Tea Party has been broken. We all are aware that they have been successful in tearing down the reputation of the Republicans and the Congress as a whole. But now they have damaged the National Party, and there's no question in my mind that between now and 2016, the leadership, if you want to call it that, of the Republican Party will have to be a little more positive with the president's agenda. What are on those agendas that will legitimize the Republicans in terms of saying it wasn't a Democratic issue, it was good for the country? But one thing is immigration reform. There's not a Republican business group or Chamber of Commerce or mayor, no matter what the party is, that really doesn't believe that immigrants are part of our economy. We can raise $80 billion over 20 years once we bring them in, give them a path to citizenship, and have them paying taxes. And the fact is that they're good for America, and that's what we're all about. And I can see the Republicans breaking with the Tea Party in Georgia, because we have enough Republican and Democratic votes to do it. It just would mean that the Republicans would have to break that agreement they have not to bring up anything that the Tea Party doesn't want. The second thing, of course, is jobs. And when you talk about jobs, you're talking about education, you're talking about job training. And this is all the president's been talking about. It's one thing to be looking for degrees. It's another thing for our workers to be prepared to take the jobs that can come back to the United States, and with some reform of the tax law, bring those companies back home. So education and jobs are so important. But again, affordable housing, you know, we hear so many people talk about 80-20, 80 luxury. There is no national crisis for luxury housing. Those people who have deep pockets and can afford luxury should not even be on the board of consideration, sure, as we find communities being priced out of their homes, landlords reducing the number of subsidized apartments, and making certain that everything is going that they can get their hands on is going to market rates. My bill requires that no one pays more than 30% of their income, and whatever subsidies are involved, that would be the difference between what the tenant owes and what the rent should be.
Congressman, let me jump in and touch a couple of more issues in our remaining time. I raised this with Senator Espaillat, too, as an immigration issue. You've both gotten criticism from some immigrant group advocates for your apparent support of the Dominican Republic's tough new undocumented immigrants law. They denied citizenship to some 200,000 people born in the country to undocumented immigrants from Haiti. New York One says both of you went down to the DR and praised the law. What's your position today?
My position is, after talking with the president of the Dominican Republic and the president of Haiti, these two countries are not only meeting on the immigration problem they have so that all of Dominicans, regardless of their background, would have a road to citizenship, which, of course, if they had that law already on the books, the courts would not have ruled these Haitian Dominicans to be without a country. Having said all of that, the good thing that came out of this, that there are major historic problems between these two countries that share this island. And I'm so pleased that I and the Congressional Black Caucus and the Hispanic Caucus played a role in bringing the leadership of both of these countries who share the same island to work out not only the immigration problem. So I don't know if anyone has been critical of me, who has been the best friend that Haiti and the Dominican Republic ever has had, and no president of either country for any years would not tell you that if they ever have a political problem, whether it's trade, domestic, Charlie Rangel's the man to call. And the record is clear on that. So I got the trade agreements with DR, I got the Caribbean trade agreements, and I'm one of Haiti's best friends. So I didn't see anything negative. But if New York One said it, they didn't have the benefit of any research.
So last question. And my last question to Senator Espaillat and Pastor Walrond was whether the race is only about who would be more effective in Congress, or if the three of you disagree on any issues. And they both said there are basically no issues in this race. What it is effectiveness, and that since your ethics censure, you have not been as effective as you've been in the past. One of them said you've only gotten one bill since then, different from your previous record. So can you argue that of the three, you would still be the most effective to represent the district in the next 2 years?
Well, let's take a look at the strong support that I've received publicly. Nancy Pelosi, Jim Clyburn, the Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, two United States Senator Jill Librand and Chuck Schumer, the entire delegation of the Democrats from New York that I'm the dean of, and I have been selected that the member of Congress that had more legislation passed into law in the last 10 years than anybody. And so regardless of whether it's in the last couple of years or the last 10 years, the question has to be, even though it's not, who is the best qualified to help this president in the last 2 years and the best shot that we need for our families, our community, and our country? Of course, I know that even those people who supported me in the past and seen fit to remove that and support Espiot, they still never denied that I'm the best qualified. Whatever it is, it's other political reasons that deal with themselves and not that seat.
Congressman Charles Rangel, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. June 24th.
June 24th is the primary in Upper Manhattan and part of the Bronx for the 13th Congressional District Democratic nomination. The incumbent, Charles Rangel, there. We heard from the two challengers just prior, Michael Waldron and State Senator Adriano Espaillat.